Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. Some of you may have noticed that I've had a little shift in my professional life recently. And something that was completely unexpected, I never really saw it coming, but it's been wonderful. And that is that I was hired as the chair of the department at Maryland University of Integrative Health, which is the only master's degree of yoga therapy in the United States right now. So I was hired in December, and now it is April, just getting my feet under me and just kind of announcing this big shift. I wanted to do it quietly and allow myself the time to feel centered about it before I talked about it too much. And I have to tell you, I am in heaven. I enjoy every single day at work. I'm not feeling stressed at all. I have the support that I need around me. And most importantly, I'm just so impressed with Maryland University of Integrative Health, MUIH as we call it. And basically the people there are just some of the most stellar people that I've ever worked with in my life, including my bosses, just role models. And kind of the framework that they have set up for healing, because MUIH has yoga therapy, Ayurveda, health promotion, health coaching, integrative medicine. They've got all these different departments that are all integrative, but it's very cool to be in a community that is discussing all of these things that I love so much. So just wanted to say that I've had a big change. It is wonderful. And today I've invited Kimberly Searle, who went to Maryland University of Integrative Health as a student to get her master's of yoga therapy many years ago. And now she is the anatomy and kinesiology teacher at MUIH. And Kim and I have been meeting every week for an hour and just kind of looking at the field of yoga therapy, looking at assessment from the perspective of the Anamaya Kosha. And what does that mean? Like, what is our end game as yoga therapists while looking at the physical body? What is it that we can do that's in our scope of practice? And what do we want our clients to experience in their physical body? Best case scenario. So we've been having all of these great discussions every week, and I invited Kimberly to come on to the podcast and kind of have an open discussion right here in front of all of you, admitting that we are still in process because this is such a young field. It's still emerging. And the standards actually have not yet been set by the International Association of Yoga Therapists or anyone else for that matter. So it is so amazing to be part of an emerging field because you get to contribute to the making of that field. Things are not yet set in stone like they might be in physical therapy or occupational therapy or psychology, which have all been around so long, 70 to maybe 200 years. We literally, in the United States at least, are 15 years old as yoga therapy field. So some would say a little bit longer, but you know. So anyway, just to say that we are contributing to the future. We are defining the future. Some might say that we are building the train tracks as the train is coming down the train tracks. And we're furiously kind of putting all the ties on the railroad track as we go along. We're creating it. So I hope you'll enjoy this beautiful offering that Kimberly is sharing with us today. And I'd like you to think about yoga therapy in the physical body. What are we trying to do with our clients? What's our end game? And basically, how are we going to assess and then create a therapeutic plan? All right, let's go get started.
Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. In 2025, we have decided that we want to turn this podcast over to the audience. Yes, you, the listener. We want you to come on. This is not going to be all about the experts and everyone who's ever written a book in yoga or yoga therapy or Ayurveda. We want to hear your story of healing. How did yoga, yoga therapy, or Ayurveda help you to heal yourself from the inside out? And that's not to say that we can't also use Western allopathic medicine, but there's something different about yoga and how it helps us to heal. And I would love for you to be a guest to come on the podcast. You can contact me and we will get you set up. So the entire year of 2025, we are looking for stories of people like you. It's your time to shine. Come join us and be a guest on the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. Welcome, Kimberly Searle, to the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. I'm so happy to have you here today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here with you.
This is our second time together. So those of you who want to can go all the way back to, I'm not sure which episode it is, but I could look it up. But today we're going to do something a little different, a different context, a different purpose. We're going to start with our anatomy stories. So first of all, what is your anatomy story? What does that even mean, Kimberly?
You know, I think people get really attached to their anatomy, and understandably so, right? Because we live in this body, but we all have a story. I kind of like the term anatomy story because we have this story of living in our body. And for some of us, as we're living in our body and trying to heal, we end up learning a lot about anatomy and kinesiology. So I'm a farm kid. I grew up on a farm. And so I would like to watch horses and sheep and dogs and cats and pigs kind of move around. I think that's when I first started to learn how to read a body. My parents would say things like, I would know when a horse was going to fall, or I would know if an animal was limping. And I think that got me curious at a really young age about the mechanics of living beings. And so, you know, from then I had a horseback riding accident where I broke my T12 and my coccyx. And trying to heal from that, I discovered yoga and went on this healing journey. And so it just kind of, you know, expanded beyond that. I could keep going into all the ladders of climbing. You know, that also led me to having a master's of science in yoga therapy and doing my TED Talk as well.
We will get back to the master's of the TED Talk. Don't you worry. All right. So just hearing you talk, like I've never thought about what my anatomy story is, but I can say that I think for most of my life, I've been pretty disembodied, which I didn't know. That's the funny thing. You know, you're in your mid-50s and discovering this about yourself. And this comes after 25 years of yoga. I want to say that a lot of us have been doing yoga and still disembodied. It's not like you start yoga and all of a sudden you're embodied again. So if I go all the way back, I just think I was kind of floating around in my body for most of my life. And I was a super athlete in junior high, high school, Division I track and field in college. I was a heptathlete. So I did high jump, long jump, shot put, hurdles, 800, 200, and javelin. And even during all of that time, I think I was very disembodied. I mean, we're practicing 3 hours in the morning and 3 hours in the afternoon. You'd think that that kind of high intensity workout would get you really in touch with your body. And I think I was in touch with it in some ways, like how much food do I need to make it through this particular hard practice kind of thing. But in other ways where you really feel grounded and safe in your body, which is what we teach in yoga therapy, integrated into your own body, mind, and spirit, and here I am, and like definitely none of that. None, you know? So listening to you talk about the animals on the farm and kind of watching them and their biomechanics, I did that with human bodies as an athlete. You'd be warming up and you'd watch who else was warming up, and you could see the people that had efficiency in their gait. You could see the people that had a wobble right to left. So I think just it's kind of interesting, whether it's farm animals or human beings on a track, if you watch and observe, you really do start to learn the human body. And I think
One of the things you and I have talked about, and I've talked with Marlisa Sullivan about that, this also is that it's so intuitive to us because we've been doing it so long that we haven't been able to codify it very well to teach other people in a succinct way that applies to yoga therapy. And I just want to start this episode out saying that even though Kimberly is, you know, one of the top anatomy people at a master's degree for yoga therapy, I think the field as a whole hasn't figured out what does a yoga therapist need to know about anatomy and kinesiology, and even what does a yoga therapist need to know about assessment of the physical body. Like, these are new discussions that we're all having because, let's face it, there's some PTs that came in and kind of were teaching, you know, here's how a PT looks at it, but it's quite different if you don't have a PT background. So I don't know where that brings us to, Kimberly. Do you want to jump in here and say anything?
I totally agree with you. You know, when we look at the competencies from Yoga Alliance and IAYT, and then we think about the program that you and I both teach and work in, one, we're still a fairly new field. So, you know, things are starting to come out and we're starting to debate those. But one thing that I've really been noticing is you and I, that was kind of our 2025 goal, I think, was to really define and discern some things. And as you and I have been going back and having these, you know, civil fun debates back and forth on things, I'm starting to discover that our profession as a whole kind of has these organic terms bubbling up that even the term isn't defined. And so, you know, we have to really start to tease this apart because, you know, it is out of our scope of practice to diagnose, right? That gets into the physical therapy realm. And we also have to think about, we live in a Western world. So where in what's already working in the Western world do we fall? And, you know, think about our scope of practices and all of those things. And I keep coming back to this term of experiential anatomy. I know you come back to the term of functional movement, which I also see that. And those are the two terms that I really keep ending up on here with that regard, because I do think that we are so much more than our physical body, like bones and muscles and joints, right? That's what people think about when we're talking about the body. But I think I've taught over 33,000 hours on a body, which is a lot of hours over, you know, just shy of 20 years. So that's a lot of like visual watching bodies and thinking about the puzzles and stuff. And, you know, I always come back to breath. I come back to Koshic inquiry, that I'm not a fixer. I think that's really important because I think a lot of students, when we first see them, they want to fix. You know, we're not here in the fixing business. We're here in the guiding business, honored to be on someone's journey, offering some suggestions or some insight into those layers of koshas and healing. But I don't know what a great term to encapsulate all of that is. Like, I'm still working on that.
Yeah. I mean, one thing in our fun discussions that we're having almost weekly, I just keep asking the question, what is the end game? What does a yoga therapist need to know? Of course, we can memorize the bones and the muscles and the joints and the movement patterns and what are the flexors and what are the extensors and, you know, all of that. But then what do we do with that? And if we are a yoga therapist, what is our goal to help people? And so I just love these discussions and I love that we're okay having them, that maybe the field of yoga therapy hasn't 100% defined that anamaya kosha, that kind of physical structural kosha. And what do we do when we co-assess with the client and help them to feel maybe less pain or more ease or, you know, whatever it is that their goals are?
Yeah, you know, yoga is a healing philosophy. And I was really honored that early on in my learning of yoga, I had three key figures really stop me and say, you know, yoga isn't an exercise program. It's a healing philosophy. And when we're looking at that research, it's the philosophy. And so maybe that's why the asana or the anatomy kinesiology, you know, hasn't really been clearly defined for a yoga therapist. I'm just kind of thinking about that right now off the cuff. But we also need to understand biomedical terms. Like, we have to have that as a vocabulary. And that's one thing that I really think is great about our program, because when people get to their second year, they have to write an integrative assessment, which has more of the biomedical language. And then they have to write a yoga assessment, which has all of our yoga language. And so, you know, each student is learning to speak in both of those languages, which is important. But we're also not trying to force or inflict our views onto a client. I learned that early that, you know, just because triangle looks a certain way on a flat piece of paper doesn't mean that we're trying to push a body into that. We're instead taking that asana and finding out how we can make it accessible to the human being that's standing in front of us. And then if you layer on top of that, we're only working with the client's goals, because I see something and maybe I want to make a goal for them. Like, that's not what it's about, right? Because they might be completely happy and feel great. And so you're working with the client's goals on top of that. And I think as a new student, you know, you see people wanting to kind of get in there and pick apart things and pull things and blurt things out that maybe aren't our place to.
I'm just reflecting as you're talking that because yoga in the West has been so postural based, what we call asana, that a lot of people coming to yoga therapy are, number one, expecting this physical experience, even though, as you say, yoga is a healing philosophy. So there's that disconnect. And then, as you said, we as yoga therapists, if we're going to interface with Western allopathic medicine or psychology, we have to have kind of biomedical language that we know what the doctors, the nurses, even the clients themselves are saying to us. And yet, when we're looking at them through the yogic lens, we're not looking at it through the biomedical lens. We just have that language, right? So those are two things that kind of came to me when you were talking. And it's interesting when I think about my internships in India, where I got to go for several weeks at a time and just sit with the consultants who were doing all the assessments. On one hand, they're not using a lot of biomedical terms. But on the other hand, they were thoroughly assessing every joint and every structure of the body. So it's not like yoga therapy doesn't have anatomy and doesn't want ease and function and comfort and less pain in the body. I think even in the very, you know, traditional Indian ways of doing it, they're still looking at that asana is still a big portion. Not the whole thing, but we can't deny that it's important to feel comfortable in your body in order to live a happy life, in order to sit in meditation, in order to be pain-free so you're not distracted at work all day or unable to sleep.
My name is Amy Wheeler. I'm the host of the Yoga Therapy Hour, but also the creator of a mobile app that's based on the gunas of yoga and Ayurveda. It's the first of a kind, and we'd love for you to try it for free. The app is called The Optimal State, and it tracks the state of your gunas, and then it gives you therapeutic interventions. Now we're starting to add Dharma Talks as well as Yoga Nidra. And we think these are wonderful ways that you can do some self-care and take care of yourself on a regular basis. So come join us, the Optimal State app. We'd love to see you over there too.
We know we're a body that's made to move, right? We're designed to move, and we live in gravity. So we have to be able to hold ourselves up in gravity. We also know that circulation is really important, right? To keep everything moving and flowing and fluid. You know, we're not static beings. One of my colleagues uses this term that we're medically adjacent. And I think that's important. Like, you know, we aren't in the allopathic world, which tends to have more invasive procedures, but we're medically adjacent. And so it tends to be less invasive. And I just think that we have to be mindful of that. And you're right, we are here to help reduce suffering, but the client determines what that suffering is. You know, let's say we have someone in that kyphotic, you know, driving the desk posture. All right, so I might think like the front of the body is tight and I need to strengthen the back of the body. right? To open them up and to help with that posture. We also know it's going to affect them emotionally as well. But if none of their goals are around that, then I might make a note. And I might not even blurt that out. I might ask them inquiry questions to be curious, to see what's their felt sense. And I think we're really helping the clients to build vocabulary around interoception. I've had a client say before, like, you know, thank you for introducing me to my big toe. And they were using it kind of as a joke because they hadn't really shaped, you know, been in their body. They were living up in their head. And so our work together, they had, you know, come down into their body.
And, you know, when we say something like interoception or interoceptive awareness, can we maybe define that a little bit? Because I think so many people out there are unaware, like I was, disembodied, very little interoceptive awareness. Basically, from the neck up, everything is clear and bright and working and going at 110 miles an hour. But everything from the neck down, we just aren't feeling until the day tells us and screams at us in pain. So what do you mean by interoception or interoceptive awareness?
It's more about going in rather than out. Yeah, let's first make that distinction. I'm not looking for someone out here or some sort of felt sense out here, whether it's another practitioner or social media or whatever, right? Like, or Dr. Google, right? That's out here. So we first want to go in, and we have to drop down out of our head into our heart. So, you know, kind of grounding and bringing that energy in. And I think the breath can be that gateway between the body and the mind. So a lot of times I start with the felt sense of air, right? And where do we feel the air coming in and out of our being? But once we're in there, then we can start to explore. There are places that there's tension, places that there is ease. Is there places that is light or places that are dark? And that's where we kind of get into those opposites that we learn in yoga. And once we can develop like this vocabulary or this texture or this felt sense, you know, what are we teaching them? We're teaching them self-regulation, self-assess.
And how to feel.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I'll just give an example. When I go up the stairs, my office is downstairs, so I have to go up the stairs multiple times a day. And I literally feel like my legs are elephant legs. They feel so heavy, and walking up the stairs is a lot of work. So me tuning into that sensation of, oh my gosh, ooh, it's hard to get up these stairs, is interoceptive awareness. And then I went to a spin class on the bicycle at the gym last night and pedaled for an hour. And when I got home, my legs felt so light and energized. Now, it might be the opposite for someone else, that when they go to spin, their legs get really tired and feel heavy. But mine, when I really pump my legs, they feel so much lighter. But just that awareness of, oh, they're heavy now. Oh, if I do this, it feels lighter. Wow, that feels better. Maybe I should do more of that. When I sit in my chair for 12 hours, my legs feel worse. I don't like that feeling. They're so numb, I can't even feel them. Okay, maybe I should do less of that sitting in the chair.
Yeah, and you know, like when I had my horseback riding accident, exploring movement was painful for the first time in my life. And yoga gave me the permission to slow down and explore movement. And a lot of times with clients, I'll do something on one side of the body, and then we'll stop and we'll talk about, well, how does one side perhaps feel slightly different than the other? Like, what do you notice? And I think that's important. That's how I started to learn the differences of things. Progressive muscle relaxation also was a way for me to feel tension versus ease. I think when you've had a major injury, you kind of go into this self-protective mode and you do kind of disassociate, right, as a way to survive. And that's natural. But the more that we can come out of that survival mode and into our bodies and create that dialogue, that's fine. You know, I've had clients before that didn't know what a stretch felt like, didn't know what muscle fatigue felt like, and they think they're on the way to the ER. And as they realize that, oh, it was a short-term discomfort, maybe for greater ease, right? Like pumping your legs, right? The muscles start to burn and your heart rate goes up and you get sweaty and you're like, oh my gosh, you know, what's happening. But then when you're done with that process, that's when you feel the lightness, the grounding. Maybe perhaps you felt some for your joint, range of motion as well.
So, to me, this is a very different discussion than everything has to line up in this perfect alignment-based thing. And if you can't get your arm straight, we have to figure out how to make your arm straight, almost like an external blueprint that we want your body to look in this way. And, the theory goes that you won't get injured if you have really perfect straight alignment. Or you'll walk or run more efficiently, do yoga more efficiently if you can get that alignment. But what I hear you saying is a little bit different than that. It's more, I'm going to help you feel your body again. I'm going to help you connect with the tight areas, the numb areas, the right side versus the left side. There's almost like an exploration of the body. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. It's an exploration and it's more like a symphony, right? Like maybe you're learning, the strings and then the horns, and it'll all come together to make whatever your music is, because we're each kind of our own little unique individual self. When I was at a conference and I kind of got into fascia, or, like part of my anatomy journey was that. And I was listening to a physical therapist tell me a story where he thought that, this person really had a tight hip flexor and he wanted to get in there and really open that up for them. And when he forced his will, right, onto his patient and opened up the fascia like he thought he needed, then that person from then on was in chronic pain for the rest of their life and they felt so bad about it. So, they shared that story of pain as a practitioner with me so that I would make a different mistake, right? I got to learn from his mistake that, not always opening something that I view as tight is right. Our bodies are so smart. And that person, if they were feeling okay, why should I interfere? Yeah, I guess that's where the term curiosity comes from. I'm curious because we're exploring something together. And I feel honored to be part of that individual's team, to be on that exploration, but they're still the driver. I'm just a passenger, and I may be there for, one stop or 10 stops.
I love all that you're saying, and I agree with you that sometimes we've made functional adaptations that are actually working for us. And if we kind of pull out one of the spokes in that wheel, we actually create a system that isn't functioning well anymore. So I love that you pointed that out. So where do we want to go next? What do you think? I'm kind of thinking about what does this mean for yoga therapy assessment? I mean, if the goal is to help the person feel themselves again and understand their own body and feel present to their own body sensations and respond, what does assessment look like then? I mean, you and I have spent hours talking about this, and I'm just here to say we don't have all the answers yet. We are really passionate about this topic and it's emerging, right? But where are we today, Kimberly?
I don't think that we have completely landed on it, but I think first you have to learn it, right? You have to learn the terms in the body and what those mean, bones, joints, planes of motion, that kind of stuff, the doshas, how they apply here. And then I think you have to be able to assess it. So maybe just some basic asanas that you can look at the body and see how it moves and ask curious questions, like, does that make it feel better? Does that make it feel worse? Like, even when I'm working with a client and I think, well, their goal is to do a better down dog, let's just say. And I might offer some suggestions to play around with that. And I use the word play, right? Because we are playing, we are being curious. I don't want them to get into a fixed mindset. And every time we make a smaller adjustment, I always ask, is that better or is that worse? Or did it stay the same? Right? I'm checking in along the way because I can never feel what the body in front of me feels. And so who am I to know? From there, we can start to build that therapeutic sequence. And what's our rationale behind that? Is it a goal of the client? Have we read some research that makes it evidence informed? And I think also that Koshic inquiry, right? Those questions about the felt senses, the textures, that's how we put embodiment, like embodiment is the word that's coming up right now for me.
Before we get to the therapeutic sequence, I just want to say, thinking of assessment as kind of this co-negotiation where you're in a discussion with the client about their real-time experience, like right here, right now. What are you feeling? What are you sensing? Does that hurt? Is it feeling better? What if we try this? Oh, let's not bend your knee quite so far. How about this? In one way, it is an assessment, but it's also part of the solution of helping them to discover how their body functions and how it feels when they do this versus that. It's an assessment, but also a solution and a learning and growth process, which is quite different than kind of a hierarchical top-down, I'm just going to look at you and tell you what I think needs to be fixed or what is wrong. Right? So just
Yeah.
say this assessment, I don't even know if assessment is the right word. It's an experience together. And I ask myself, why is that important? Like, what is that about? And one of the things I come up with, because I'm interested in mental health, is that these research studies have been done all the way back into the 50s and 60s with Carl Rogers, and I think the other name is Jenland or Jenlin. They did these studies when they first started to realize progressive muscle relaxation had an impact on people, that, wow, there is something to this idea of embodiment or felt sense. I mean, back in the 50s and 60s, they were just, as psychologists and psychiatrists, discovering that there's something about that being in your body that makes a difference to your mental health. And one of the things Carl Rogers noticed and started to research was that the people who could feel their body, start to engage with their body, feel their breath, become embodied, they were the ones who healed from their mental health issues. And the ones who couldn't, who just really couldn't connect, and they might say things like, I don't know, I can't feel that. I'm not sure what you're asking. I feel numb. I don't feel anything. That when they couldn't tune into their body and feel the rhythm of their breath and feel pain versus no pain and right side versus left side and tense versus releasing, they didn't heal from their mental health issues. I mean, I find that fascinating. It's embodiment to feel embodied is a wonderful goal, but then to also see how connected that is to our mental health, that was fascinating to me.
I think it was in the late 90s or early 2000s, I discovered Deb Shapiro's book, The Body Speaks Your Mind. And that was kind of like, whew, because I think it's true. Like when people are asking me about my spinal injury, I always say, well, I could talk myself back into pain. I'm sure I could. And so, it's that mindset about that. And, last time you and I were together, we talked about cancer and our view and our journeys through cancer. And, managing the mind and bringing hope and kind of that growth mindset and being able to also ask, like, what is this moment here present in my life for? And what is it teaching me? Like, all of that boils down into the anatomy and kinesiology because your body is speaking your mind. If you're not willing to address something or see something mentally, it's going to show up in the body. And we can either address it when it's whispering or we can wait till it's screaming. It does come to that. When you're talking about assessment, one thing that a lot of people talk about is range of motion. And so should yoga therapists know what a range of motion for a joint is in the body? We're never going to measure range of motion. I think that is part of physical therapy. But I do think knowing what those ranges are is important. Like a chart, you don't have to memorize it maybe, but you know where to go and find that chart to learn. Just because we have this culture of more and more and more, we see that sometimes with yoga practitioners that come and seek us out as yoga therapists, they've overstretched to the point maybe they're into their ligaments and tendons, and those don't go back, right? We also see a lot of these AI videos being made, and I get clients going, well, I was trying to do, and I was like, let's look at that video. Like, Is that a quality video? Can we detect that that was made by an AI source? So I think being able to know what those ranges are in our modern society is probably important. You know, my question to clients now is like, well, what are you trying to obtain by bending in that way? Like, is that necessary? And if you already have normal range of motion, what would be the benefit to having more or less, right? I think that's important. That's kind of like real world therapeutic presence where hopefully we're teaching our students those critical thinking skills, right? To discern.
When you're talking, I'm thinking of like the late 1990s, maybe even to the early 2000s in the yoga world, where like all the gymnasts were the ones we were all looking at, like, ooh, they're so good at yoga, when really they were a gymnast or an ice skater. And somehow in our little brains, we thought that because they had this massive hyper flexibility, that somehow they were the best yogi, and we should all try to overstretch ourselves to be a better yogi. And that was kind of reminding me of that, like how misguided it was, you know, and that for many, many people I see as a yoga therapist, that actually yoga kind of ruined their bodies. They got overstretched tendons and ligaments that never went back. And that most of our work now, especially with women after menopause, in addition to overstretching, but also the hormonal things that happen, that a lot of our work is strengthening the glutes, strengthening the low back, strengthening the trapezius and the rhomboids. And I would say 80% of what I do with people in the physical sense is strengthening the back muscles of the body because of all the sitting, hunching forward, you know, lack of movement. How about you? Do you see any
I
patterns?
do, yeah, I do much less flexion and I do more extension, side bending, twisting with people because, you know, 50 years later, we're a flex society in most of our activities. And so, does doing more flexion make sense? I don't think so from my purview. I think it's also understanding that we all have a life cycle, right? There's a beginning and there's an end, right? Nope. It's going to happen to everyone. And understanding that pretty much with every decade or every section of the life cycle, the risk reward for certain things changes. And if we're going to age gracefully, we have to not be chasing our 20s at 60, right? We can still be strong. We can still be beautiful. We can be the new, whatever the latest age is that's out there in marketing. But we have to really be present in our body. And understand that things are shifting, and our practice then needs to shift to what is necessary.
I had this talk with my Ayurvedic doctor 2 days ago, and I was complaining about having gained weight and asked what my A1C level is, and it's perfectly fine. And said, I just went to the spin class, didn't even feel like it was a hard thing, you know, no problem. And he's like, what's the problem, Amy? You're 55 years old. What's the problem? And I said, well, this extra weight. He said, after menopause, like it's good to have a little extra weight. It's a little lubricating. You want a little. And he and I were just going back and forth. And, you know, this idea that we have to stay so lithe and slender, it's just so hard to rid yourself of that as you're aging, when maybe functionally we would actually be healthier and happier with a couple extra pounds. Like, it's not the end of the world.
I'd like to teach my clients it's not about a number, right? Look at your blood work. If your blood work's good, that's a good indicator that everything's fine. The body shape is going to change as we age, right? We can look at bodies over a continuance of time. So we can talk about that in the aging process, but I also think if we're looking at anatomy, I live near Cleveland, and the Cleveland History Museum has a very large compilation of human bones. So if you look at a dozen femurs side by side, they're all very different and their shapes are slightly different. And so again, I think that, you know, takes us back to every time you see a body, even if you've been working with the person for a couple months, always view that body as a fresh new body, right? You have to be able to come with that open mind.
Yeah. So we've talked a little bit about assessment. Let's go to therapeutic sequence. What is our goal there? Again, I just think, you know me, function over form. What is my goal for that?
Well, I think there are functional movement patterns, and I always start with that. So, you know, if someone wants to work on a particular area of the body, you know, what's a functional movement pattern for that person? And then we want to have maybe three strengthening poses and two counter poses to that. And then always leaving time for rest. I start every session with natural breath. Right? We're not trying to change it. We're simply becoming aware because I want to shift that mind out of the doer and into the observer. And once we're in the observer, the functional movements are a small range of motion, a very simple movement, but requires a lot of concentration. It requires coordinating breath with movement, first kind of teasing that joint a little bit. And then we can go into, you know, all the beautiful asanas that they might see in social media, their books and things. And we can start to talk about, you know, what's the goal of that asana? How does that work in your body? And give people permission that their shape and space can look different from someone else's.
Yeah. As you've said before, what are their goals? Do they want to be hiking for 3 miles a day because they enjoy nature? Do they want to be able to bend over and pick up their grandchild without hurting their low back? Do they want to be able to sit at a campfire in one of those very low campfire chairs because they like to go camping in the summer? Like actually figuring out what has meaning and purpose in their life. And then how are we going to get this body to get into those positions? Like maybe we give some Utkatasana or squatting because of the camp chair. Or we give some back strengthening exercises to be able to lift up the grandchild, right? Looking at the meaning in their life and tying that to what does your body need to do to achieve that meaning?
Dr. Sanwez is a DO local in my area, and I was doing some training with him. And he described his practice where he no longer took new clients because his clients had children and he had their children and their children had children and he had their children. And I remember thinking like, wow, that would be so cool. Like, I hope I could get to that point and striving for it. And one thing that I've kind of serendipitous is I have three generations now of families in my private practice.
Wow.
And mom found me first, and she has three lovely children. So we're working through that part of her life. And then I started to work with her oldest child. And then now comes grandma. And what a wonderful thing is grandma is over there playing and was down on the floor. And here comes the older child walking through, watching grandma playing with the two younger child. And he was like, ah, Kim, right? And she came in and she was like, he noticed that I could get down on the floor and get back up. And he put it together that, you know, she had learned that here at our healing center. And so, you know, how wonderful is that? You know, sometimes older people come to be able to get down up off the floor to play with children. They also need to be able to still squat down onto the toilet and stand back up, right? We all have to do that. That keeps independence. You know, moms who are busy working and caring for children and lifting and twisting and, you know, lifting the baby carriers and all of that have a different goal. People who are driving a desk. And so you're right. Like, how wonderful is it that we get to peer into people's lives and see how they're living it and then help them improve that to be better, to function better in their body for them?
I love it. And, you know, I've had some yoga therapy students say, well, aren't we kind of treading on the scope of practice of a PT or an OT? And I always say, no, I don't think those things are exclusive to PT and OT. You've got personal trainers who've taken a 3-day weekend workshop who are helping people pick up a bag of groceries or get through the supermarket. You know, movement is movement, and there's many, many different ways that people are supported in their movement practices, from somatics to Feldenkrais to yoga therapy to personal training to OT to PT. So I just want to point that out there, that we have a very specific way that we look at it through the yoga lens, which is different than some of those other ones I just listed.
For example, when I'm talking about that mother in the birthing process, you think of all of that. She was feeling some discomfort. And I just said, well, the pelvis has over 29 muscles, right, that run through there. And I think it's time to go to physical therapist because a physical therapist can diagnose that. They can see what part of the kinetic chain isn't working or isn't firing. And I work hand in hand a lot with physical therapists. I refer clients to them. They'll send a message back and say, hey, I'm going to do this. Let's just make sure we're not fighting each other. But while they're at the physical therapist, there's so much to work on: breath, right? Meditation, mindset, movement of other areas of the body that, the example I gave was pelvis, that are outside of the pelvis. And also, insurance doesn't let you stay there for very long. So then we kind of become the next step also with that guided movement to create safety and security in their body as they continue to move with what they learned. Yoga therapists will have their printout, or physical therapists will have their printout area. And then I might look at what they're working on and think, well, what yoga asana is similar to that shape? And then when they're, that might be part of the next step is to include something similar in that shape for them.
Or how can we slow down that movement they've been doing in PT and put some breath work to it? Or I remember Eleanor Criswell. I had had this terrible situation with my glutes not firing well, especially my gluteus minimus and medius. And at the PT, I had been doing all these clamshells, 3 sets of 20, you know. And Eleanor saw me walk and she's like, come over here. She had me lay down on this couch. This was at an IYT board meeting, by the way. And she said, you're focusing on the concentric or the spreading your knees apart in the clamshell. She said, I want you to really slow it down, work with breath, and work on the eccentric, which means the lowering of the knees together. Make that last 30 seconds. One rep in 30 seconds of bringing your knees together in the clamshell. My side glutes turned on immediately that day. Why had no one slowed it down, put it with breath, and had me focus on the eccentric? It was shocking to me how well that worked.
Very true. I love eccentric contraction. When a client is moving, like let's say they're doing the clamshell, I try to breathe with it because I always say, let's do one breath, one movement. And if I find that I'm hyperventilating, then I ask the client, like, can we slow down to like a snail's pace or a turtle's pace? Because you think about our society, like we're just stimulated with so much information all the time. And when I ask for a 4 seconds to collect muscles that they need to stabilize, to anchor, so that mobility can happen, you would think that I asked for 4 hours. And I'm like, but it's 4 seconds that we can pause to collect all of that and then allow movement to happen. And I ask them, like, what did you feel different? Like, what was different between, kind of not breathing and moving quickly versus breathing and slowing down and allowing that 4 seconds for you to collect stuff? What was different? And they're like, well, actually, it was kind of easier. It's that effort with ease. It doesn't mean that they weren't working hard, but they were able to feel the movement and to discern whether they were in alignment and what's happening.
So you're kind of talking about like 4 seconds of motor planning. Like, okay, I'm about to stand up. I'm going to get my legs underneath me. I'm going to use my abs a little bit to stabilize, like kind of thinking through it, maybe even imagining it and then doing it.
Yes. And the imagination part happens. I mean, you use like seated to standing. And so I want them first to find their best seated posture. And then we talk about what's going to happen. You're going to push down into your feet. You're going to feel your inner thighs draw together, your glutes squeeze, your kneecaps lift. You're going to feel that abdominal engagement, right? As if someone's pulling the spine up like a hot air balloon. Then we're coming all the way up. We're engaging with that.
Yeah, that's big. If that's all a yoga therapist did was motor planning and breathing and feeling and kind of pulling it all together, as you say, before we jump up or sit down or whatever we're needing to do, that's a big deal.
Well, I learned that from Eric Franklin's work. He brings a lot of imagery into anatomy and, like the pelvis is perhaps 2 wheels and does one have a flat tire or the go spinning. And I bring that to our students. Yes, we need to know bones and joints and whatever, but they already need to know that. They've learned that in their 200 hour right before they get to us. So now I'm really working on their critical thinking. I'm teaching them about imagery, about Koshic inquiry, and how does that all play together with the human being that you have in front of you.
And the breath. Breath with the movement, breath when you're motor planning, like...
Breath precedes movement.
Yeah.
Exactly. Breath needs to start before the load happens.
Yeah. And do you find that the students at Maryland University of Integrative Health, that's where you and I work, by the way, we haven't said that yet, we're both in the master's program at Maryland, MUIH. Do you feel like the students, I don't know, I'm just wondering, because I'm new, I'm the new chair there. You've been there quite some time now. I can imagine that people are thinking we're going to be mini PTs. And when you break it down to slow down, feel, interoceptive awareness, 4-second motor planning, is that hard for them to realize how crucial and critical those things are, that that's where it's at, as opposed to I want to do some big, you know, assessment of the kinesiology and I want to basically be a physical therapist. Like, is it hard for them to like break it down to the more simple aspects, but very powerful aspects?
I feel like I'm a myth buster.
Okay.
Because they come in either thinking that they're going to do this, like, how am I going to be a better vinyasa teacher with all the pretzel poses? Or they think that they're going to turn into a mini PT. And it's really neither, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those are two ends of a spectrum, but there's something so vast in the middle that they haven't even thought about.
Yeah. Which is, let's put a name on it.
Do we have one?
I don't know. We are in process with this, right? What most people are saying is to be embodied, but that's becoming so overused. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a word now. And if I can just drop into my own body and say, what is it that you do, Amy, when you feel this yoga therapy thing happening? I don't have a word yet. Do you?
I don't, because, you know, like embodiment, healing presence, experiential, functional, like all of those words come flooding in. And so I'm not 100% sure what that collective term would be. And I know I had sent you an email in the last couple of days because I'm like, I'm trying to get into this definition of things. I went down this rabbit hole of defining and discernment. You know, I don't know what that's called because it almost seems something larger than us. And I'm not sure what that really would be called.
The three words that come to mind for me are, I feel safe in my body. I feel strong in my body. And there's something about like, there's an integration with my body, my breath, and my mental state. So those are the three things: safe, strong, integrated. I'm going to type into the GPT chat and see what it tells us.
Some people wonder why my healing center is called Integrative Sustainable Movement. And I think of integrative because it integrates with other modalities, other things people want to do. Sustainable because it's something that can be a lifetime practice. It's a personal practice. It's not like, check, I did that, you know? And it is movement. Breathing's movement. Thoughts are movement. Moving the physical body is movement. So I would love to hear what the chat GPT thinks.
Kim and I are like the GPT chat queens, by the way. We're not holding back.
No, we're like, what do you think about that?
Here's what I think about AI. If it's going to take off anyway, I want to be part of the discussion and I want it to hear what I consider to be really great yoga therapy ideas. Like, I want to be part of that conversation. So here's what I wrote. Give me a word that means safe, strong, and integrated. And it said, if you're looking for one word that captures the essence of safe, strong, and integrated, a powerful option is resilient. And here's why. Safe means you're grounded, secure within yourself. Strong means you're capable of withstanding stress or challenge. Integrated means that you're aligned, cohesive, and whole. Resilient brings all of those together, the ability to stay rooted and whole through life's storms, returning to center without fragmentation. What do you think? Do you like that?
I like that. I do like resilience.
Yeah. So it's an ongoing discussion. We are just getting started. Maybe every 6 months we should meet and see where we're at. And I think this is actually a big discussion in the field of yoga therapy, that different programs are kind of figuring it out and figuring out what their assessments are. But from what I'm seeing out there, they're borrowing a lot from PT. I've been involved in about 7 or 8 different programs. I just keep coming back to, oh, why are we doing that again? So I love the direction that you and me and Marlisa and some of the others are having about, are we making the body resilient? Are we making it safe, strong, and integrated with body, mind, and spirit? That's really our end game.
Yeah, very well said. And sometimes people don't understand that spirit in Latin is actually breath. And so it can be something higher. It can be soulful, but it also can be that breath. And we do want resilient bodies.
Yeah.
And I think safety is missing. I teach in public schools. There's definitely a safety security inside of themselves. That's where I spend most of my time when I'm asked to come and do workshops there. Yeah, I think that's great. You know, one of the reasons that I decided to choose the program that we choose is because I wanted the rigor of academia. And when you were saying, you know, you've witnessed 7 or 8 different schools and everyone's doing something different, I really wanted that rigor and oversight. And that's one thing that I really appreciate about our program is that's there. And you do so much learning your first year. And the second year is all your clinic where you're doing, applying that, right? It's performance assessment from what you learned in that first year. And there are so many rich discussions that I'm so proud with the students that end up graduating and to see how they're holding true to our scope of practice, holding to yoga philosophy, and still making it work in a modern world.
So this should be pointed out that before you became an anatomy professor at Maryland University of Integrative Health, you actually were a student at MUIH. So you've been here for the long haul and seen over, I don't know, 13, 14 years now?
I learned from Marlisa Sullivan and was able to see how she grew the practice. And she really helped me get into those subtleties and questions. And she gave wonderful documentation. And also she's helped me with my research. So there's a research component too, where, you know, you're thinking about study design and case studies and reflecting. And I think that's all really rich work because we all stand on someone else's shoulders, right? Yeah. And so all of my professors, I stood on their shoulders to bring me to today, and the students that are coming up are standing on our shoulders. And we have to remember that we're a young profession and we have to bring those ethical precepts into everything that we do as a clinician, as a business owner, and in our own practice, right? So I always think that we're looking at it at 3 different levels when we're talking about ethical precepts and bringing that here. And yeah, I got to do my internship at a Johns Hopkins hospital. I graduated back in 2017, you know, to perform yoga therapy at the bedside was really, really rewarding. And I also worked in the natural care clinic and then moving to telehealth post pandemic. And so, you know, setting those guidelines up for, you know, and following the rigor again of maybe something in an allopathic world, but being adjacent so that we can do all that rich work because insurance doesn't dictate how long we spend with our patient. And we can really get into, you know, the meaning and purpose and nitty gritty of what will help them heal.
You have been around a long time. You know, the first time I ever said, oh, who is this woman? Was I saw you were giving a TED Talk. And this is during the time when TED Talks were all the rage. It was like the hottest thing to get a TED Talk. And I was like, oh my gosh, she's doing a TED Talk on yoga therapy. And I noticed that at the bottom of all your emails, you still have a link to that TED Talk. So you were a real pioneer in our field to go out there and talk about yoga therapy before anybody really even knew what it was.
You know, when I was graduating and doing my coursework and I was hanging up my research posters, you know, because I was had them presented at SEER and other regional conferences and stuff. I'm lucky that I have some very important people as clients. And one of my clients had turned me on to TED Talks and I was listening to those on my lunch. And another client, you know, I got them involved, and I jokingly said one day, wouldn't it be funny if I did the first yoga therapy TED Talk? And they both nominated me. So here comes this email, and I thought, oh my gosh. I was like, oh, well, I'll just fill it out. They won't pick me. And then they did, and I thought, oh, I have to rise to that. So I remember reaching out to Marlisa Sullivan, Matthew Taylor, Gupta. I can't think of his first name, but he's a pharmacist who had done a TED Talk and presented at Sitar. Yeah. And so I reached out to them and I was like, help me out here. What do you think I should talk about? And it was difficult to do. I stood up in my studio while a friend watched me play, and we thought of, different songs to make me think of different things off the top of my head, so that when nerves got to me, I could do that talk. I still think we're defining it for the public, but I think that that's a great starting point for people. I talk about eudaimonia, I talk about spirituality, I talk about the definition of yoga therapy, chronic pain, and how that overlaps with yoga therapy. The allopathic world is trying to have integrative health by asking like three or four mental health questions when they meet you. But is that enough? And I personally don't think it's enough. I think it's time that we start to look at complementary integrative medicine and allopathic medicine and how we can support each other. I don't like the term complementary alternative medicine because I feel like the allopathic community got a bad taste in their mouth. The word alternative to a lot of people means either or instead of. And I like the word integrative because we definitely do integrate well together and we understand that we need both. And I feel like there's a lot of suffering going on because we're fighting over whose modality is better. And really, we need both to help people heal.
Beautifully said. All right, Kimberly. Well, thank you for being here today. And I guess what I'll say is I'll see you at work in a few hours since we email all the time.
Yes, when we get some things figured out, if we ever do, maybe
We
we can
will.
come back again and share it.
I think we're very, very close. The meetings we've been having weekly have really helped me to clarify my thinking about this. So I'm really grateful that you're a partner in collaboration with me.
I love to collaborate. And while we sometimes speak different terms, we're still speaking the same language. And I think we'll stumble upon the term that we both think will work for our profession. And then we'll be like, why didn't we think about
Ah,
that
okay, now I'm on a mission to find that term.
right away?
We got
All
this.
right. Well, thank
Thank
you
you
so
so much.
much.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. And I want to thank Kimberly Searle for coming on here today and sharing her wisdom, her knowledge, her expertise with us. There's so few people that are willing to just come and have a really honest and raw discussion about all of this. I see tidbits of it at people conversing on Facebook, but to go for an hour and talk about the realness of our emerging field is just such a gift, and I'm grateful that she's willing to do that. A couple other things I want to tell you about. Number one is that our fall class at Maryland University of Integrative Health, MUIH, is starting next August, August 2025. We have an incoming class for people who want to get a master's degree in yoga therapy. You have to have a bachelor's, a 200-hour teacher training or equivalent, and teaching experience to even apply for the program. So if you're out there thinking, I really would love to get a master's degree, we would love to talk to you. Second thing I want to tell you is I've started a blog. There's so many discussions about yoga therapy that I want to have with people. I'm just kind of yoga therapy obsessed. And so I've started a new blog and it's on www.amywheeler.com. I have so many topics up there already and I'll be adding more topics onto the yoga therapy blog all day, every day. So it's called the Yoga Therapy Bridge blog and it's on amywheeler.com. Thanks, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you to our guest today. And as we complete the podcast, I just want to remind you that we have Monday night clinics where we have an entire community come together to do gentle postures, breath work, and yoga nidra meditation every Monday night. We have a theme for the month, And all through 2025, we have all of our themes mapped out. You can go to www.theoptimalstate.com and look on the top menu bar where it says the Monday Night Clinic. We invite you to come and be part of our community on Monday nights. All right, I hope to see you there. Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.